I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Arnold Palmer is the Masters champion of 1960. He has birdied the last two holes to catch and then move ahead of Ken Venturi, one of the greatest displays of courageous golf that anybody has ever seen any place.
Now, up the hill.
Oh, did you ever see one like that? I think that's one of the greatest putts I've ever seen in my life.
There it is!
Can you believe it?
Nick Faldo! There it is! A win for the ages!
Is it his time?
Yes!
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Hello, friends. I'm Jim Nantz. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to the Masters Tournament. I've heard it said before, it's a tradition unlike any other.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Masters podcast on the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, I am joined by 1996 USAM runner-up and 1997 Masters contestant Steve Scott. Steve, welcome on.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's we get to talk to the man that, you know, had the most probably famous loss in US amateur history.
Hey, yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things that, I really wear it as a badge of honor, you know, but it's, I played great under great pressure and, you know, the Tiger guy just played a little bit better. And he said, if I can beat Steve Scott in this final US amateur, I am ready to turn pro. And he went on and he nipped me in 38 holes and he went.
Yeah, that's the tough thing with match play. We saw it at that. You see it every year at the match play on the tour. Is like you can play as good a golf as you can play and just get beat. And to have that happen in a final of a USAM, I mean, it had to be one of the greatest USAM matches of all time.
Yeah, it was pretty historical. I mean, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Bobby Jones, nobody had ever won three US amateurs in a row, and you know, for me to be the guy to be in the way of history per se, you know, it was a pretty unique situation to be in. I mean, you think of the odds of just making it to the US amateur in general is highly difficult. And then you have a field of 312 players that pares down to two at the end of the week. And it was me and that guy. And, you know, you think of the odds of that, it's pretty astronomical. And, you know, I played my heart out. I didn't blow it. I didn't choke. If it was stroke play, I would have beat him, but it wasn't stroke play. It was just one of those things that, golf always comes down to one shot. It just happened to be, that last hole I made a bogey and he made a par and that was it. It was just a monumental day in golf history and probably something that will never be repeated ever again.
Yeah, I don't foresee anybody winning three straight because after two, they'll turn pro, I imagine.
Yeah, they turn pro after one and they want to think they can go dominate the world. It's very difficult. It's very difficult out there. Yeah, the thing about golf is there's just no guarantees. It's not like playing, being a top prospect in baseball or football and signing multi-million-dollar contracts. I mean, golf, you have to prove yourself every single day. If you're out there on the MLB field and you know, if you don't get a hit, you don't get paid. I don't think those guys would like that very much. In golf, that's the case. If you don't play well, you don't get paid that week.
That's what I always say to people when they talk about, like, you know, life, mini tour golfers, or my buddy who's playing on the web tour. And it's like, you know, this guy does not have a glamorous life right now. It's, you know, if he makes it to the PGA Tour and stays up there for a while, yes, that's, you know, then you're living the life. But there's so few spots, and the road to it is so difficult, especially if you're playing on Latin America or Canadian tour. Like, the money is so small, and if you play bad for 8 weeks in a row, you're not bringing home any cash.
Exactly. You don't finish in the top five. You're darn near not going to make expenses for the week. So it's coming up the ladder is certainly you have to be super dedicated. And you got to have a little bankroll behind you. And, it is an extreme challenge that, some people do it for a few years and then, you know, they go get a job in the real world because it's just that tough. But you know what, at the end of the day, you know, it is a pretty cool profession, you know, getting to play golf and making money at it. So, it is kind of a cool thing too.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's why so many people try and do it. It's one of the best jobs you could have. Knowing Augusta is on the line in that USAM, how was the pressure in the semifinal match compared to like the finals? Obviously that adds a wrinkle to, you know, your regular match, I imagine.
Yeah. You know, Andy, I had the luxury of making it to the semifinals in 95 at Newport Country Club. And I was really, really nervous that match. The year before I played in, you know, against Tiger in that match. But, the year before in 95, I played against Buddy Marucci who ended up beating me 19 holes. And I can just remember how fast everything was moving in my mind and how nervous that I was. And the next year when I got to the semifinals again, I mean, to have that experience under my belt, it was really funny how the perception of time slowed down and I was able to kind of control the things. And I was ready. I was ready to make that step because I had the success that I did the year before and had that opportunity the year before. So, you know, I certainly didn't want to let it go two times in a row.
After a couple months go by, you get, you know, the invite. How many times did you go out and practice at Augusta before the week of the tournament?
You know, I was still a sophomore at the University of Florida. And so I had, you know, had schooling to do and whatnot. I did go in March of 97. I made a trip over a weekend. And I think I played a couple rounds. And I didn't go a ton like some people do. But I was able to, you know, go out there for a couple practice rounds before. And I got to tell you, the golf course plays zero like it plays during the tournament, even a month before. They really ramp the golf course up. And even from Monday to Thursday of Masters Tournament week, the golf course changes dramatically. The balls don't roll back into the from the banks on number 15, let's say, or number 12 on Monday. But Thursday, like Wednesday afternoon, it's like Disney World. They go out there and there's this, you know, they roll and cut and roll until they just can't do it anymore. And, you know, it's one of those things that the golf course, now the balls are all trickling in Thursday morning, you know, first round. And it's a different golf course. They just totally ramp it up in a very short amount of time.
That's funny. That was going to be my next question. So the difference, you know, from Wednesday to Thursday is just, you know, monumental.
Yeah, I remember when I play a practice round on Wednesday morning and I went and played the par three course. And then I came back out to the main putting green to roll some putts and they had done all their work on the main putting green. And I drop a couple balls and I'm just, you know, I want to, you know, how you just drop a couple balls and you're ready to go putt. and the balls wouldn't stay on the green. Like the balls are rolling off the practice putting green. I'm like, oh boy, I'm really in for it this week. I mean, it was totally like linoleum that you just dropped it on and the balls just wouldn't stop. It was out of this world.
You heard the stories of Tiger practicing on Stanford's basketball court putting. Did you do anything beforehand special to work on putting on extraordinarily fast greens?
No, I didn't go to those limits. You know, I don't think anything really prepares you for, I mean, look, unless you're super lucky enough to, you know a superintendent who will totally scalp a green at your home course, you know, there's nothing that really prepares you for hitting a 50 or 60 footer at Augusta National during Masters tournament week. You just don't have any frame of reference. And I really remember struggling on those type of putts because, I mean, it was just the greens are just so fast and you're trying to go in your memory bank of, okay, what do I do here? How hard do I really need to hit this 50 footer down? I remember I had a 90 footer all the way across the green on the 15th hole. I think I had, it was for eagle or something. And the pin was front left and I was all the way on the right and it was downhill the whole way. And I hit this putt from 90 feet and I probably, you know, I could have hit it like a 10 footer. And it never stopped. It went all the way across the green and off the other side. And you just have no frame of reference. It's just that unique.
Yeah, I think the thing that gets lost is that with the speed is that the greens are also some of the most vicious and undulating greens around. You know, they have these slopes that are just, you know, incredible. They're, you know, especially the McKenzie greens are just out of this world. With, you know, Alistair McKenzie and Perry Maxwell doing most of the greens there.
Yeah, you combine severe, you know, 3 or 4 degree slopes with the speed of the greens that they make them at, and they can suck the moisture and make them, you know, as firm and as fast as you could ever imagine. It's one of those things. If you have, like when I saw the greens, and after all, they did all the work on the Wednesday, it's almost like the greens, they're not even green anymore. They're like a purpley blue looking. They're just like, it's just a different, it's a totally different arena. And you get out there and you know you have work. And, you know, I guess that's why typically it takes a few years around a few Masters tournaments to really get a good perspective of how you need to play the golf course.
Who'd you play your practice rounds with?
Andy, I had some amazing practice rounds. Somebody gave me the idea of writing letters to people I wanted to play with. And I want to say it was my college coach, Buddy Alexander. And so I wrote letters to Justin Leonard. I wrote a letter to Jack Nicklaus. And I wrote a letter to Greg Norman. And they all three of them obliged with a practice round for me. So I played with Justin Leonard on Monday, and that was soon after he won the British Open the year before. And then I played with Mr. Nicklaus on Tuesday, and then I played with Greg Norman and Steve Elkington on Wednesday. And it was super. It was just so good. I mean, I couldn't even put it into words what the experience was like, and to go around with Nicklaus in particular, because he'd won all the green jackets and, you know, he was like a grandpa out there to me. You know, he's 57 years old at the time. And, you know, he was just showing me the ropes and showed me this one putt above the pin on number 9. And I could have sworn this putt was going to break left to right half a foot at least. And he said, play it half a foot right to left. And it was totally, you know, opposite of what I thought. And so, you know, I did. And I played it the way he told me to do it. And from about 30 or 40 feet, and I buried the putt. And I just kind of looked over and I shook my head and I said, man, I guess this is why you've won 6 green jackets.
That's got to be so cool to get to play with Jack out there on during the week. Who gave you the best, you know, single piece of advice?
I don't know. I mean, Justin Leonard was really good. He just, you know, he said, just, you know, get there early, play some practice rounds. You know, I don't know. I mean, there was just a lot of people gave great advice. I can't pinpoint it to one, but You know, it's just one of those things. You have to get out there and experience the course. And, you know, for me, I think I just tried to soak it all in. I mean, I didn't play very well that week, unfortunately. I missed the cut. And the cut was abnormally high that year. It was like 6 over par was the cut. It was abnormally firm and fast. And this is before all the tiger proofing and the lengthening of the course and the rough and all that stuff. You know, it was just, it played extremely difficult. If you remember, you know, Tiger wins by 12 shots over Tom Kite, shoots 6 under par and finished second. So, you know, it was a very difficult golf course that year. And I barely broke 80 both rounds. And, you know, but I've never had as much fun playing crummy as I did there.
Yeah. So, the first tee, is that, how were the nerves there? And was there a spot on the golf course other than that, that you were, you know, abnormally nervous to a regular round?
What I remember, and maybe, you know, the first tee, you're always amped up and especially there. And I remember during the practice round, my Wednesday practice round with Elkington and Norman, Elkington hit his drive out there on first and Norman hit, and I hit last. And I think I outdrove Norman by, you know, 5 or 10 yards and you know, I was pretty amped up you know, it was just really cool. You know, listening to all the, you know, the fans, you know, kind of maybe heckle Norman for getting outdriven by a, you know, a kid. And, you know, I was never really known for being a long hitter at that point, and I'm still not. So, you know, it's pretty cool how far you can hit a golf ball with adrenaline. Yeah. And you know, first tee at the Masters is kind of the you know, the epitome of you know, trying to control that you know, that adrenaline and the emotions.
Mm-hmm. So that shot on 12 is you know, you hear about the wind so much. Tell us a little bit. You know, is it as tough as everybody says with the wind?
Yeah, it certainly is. I kept it out of the water both days, which was nice. I remember in the practice round the month before, I remember being so nervous because, you know, you'd watch the Masters on TV for, you know, a ton of years. And I don't ever remember being nervous in a practice round. And I was nervous in a practice round. You know, I'd get up there and I think I dumped one or two in the water, you know, a month before. But yeah, the winds do swirl. You get, you know, you get the flag on 11. That looks like it's downwind, and you know, the wind kind of turns back in that corner and comes back into you, and yeah, you have to kind of, you got to get a little lucky. Let's put it that way. I mean, the green on the left side might be 13 to 15 paces deep, and then in the middle it's like 7 paces deep, and in the right side it's like, you know, 9 or 10. So, you know, it's one club. If you miss club by one, right, or one little, you take a little too much speed off of a shot, or you get a little adrenaline, and you know, that's why you see guys go in the back bunker and go, it is the most challenging 155 yard shot that you could imagine, because the green is just, it's so shallow from front to back.
So you alluded to watching a ton of Augusta coverage as a kid. What was the thing playing the course that was the most different from what you know, thought it was from watching it?
You know, I think the terrain at Augusta National is, I mean, the drop from the tee to the green at the 10th hole, for example, is just unbelievable. You know, you certainly can't get a sense of that on, you know, on television at all. It's such an amazing climb, and, you know, down at the 12th green and the 13th tee area, that's kind of the low point of the golf course, and everything works back up to the clubhouse from there. And it's, I think the terrain probably is the most significant thing. And then, you know, then it's just the speed of the greens. You don't have any appreciation for how great of putters, you know, guys like Ben Crenshaw were, and the putt that Nicklaus made in 86 on 17, and, you know, and even on 18 and in 86, when Nicklaus hit that putt from the bottom tier all the way up to the top and almost hold it. I mean, like, that is a really tough putt. And, you know, the appreciation for those shots, you just don't get unless you're there in person and see how much slopes that there are out there.
In terms of the tournaments over the years, do you still watch a lot of the Masters or most of it? Is it still a ritual for you?
I watch every minute that I can. I whether it's streaming online or on television. I mean, the Masters, you know, I'm not only, you know, a professional golfer. I'm a golf fan. I'm a golf nut. And I love everything. I mean, this time of year is like, I'm like a kid in a candy store, really. I mean, I'm 40 years old and I still feel, you know, those, it's that excitement of spring and the Masters just really, you know, gets that out of you every time. And it's that, you know, the lead up to the Masters is great. And I don't know, I personally can't get enough.
What tournaments and shots do you think don't get spoken about enough or forgotten?
I don't know. I mean, I think they kind of all do. I mean, you know, you go back, I don't know, I guess I think of the 80s into the 90s and, you know, from Sandy Lyle hitting a fairway bunker shot and hitting it to 5 feet above the hole on the 72nd hole and making it, or, you know, like, I don't know. I think they all get their due, really. You know, I don't know. That's a tough one because there's so many that get their due. I don't know. It's hard to say that one, really.
What hole did you find to be kind of the most under the radar great hole that, you know, outside of Amen Corner that you loved?
There's so many. I mean, the greens, like, getting your approaches into the greens have to be so precise. The fairways, they mow them back to the tee, and to have a sand wedge, you know, up to the green on number 7, for example, off of a super tight lie that the grain is mowed right into you, it's so hard. I totally can see why Jordan Spieth a couple years ago dumped a couple into Rays Creek, you know, when he had that layup on number 12, when he hit in the water, then he dropped and pretty famous, but for bad reasons. But, you know, it, the precision needed to hit a wedge shot off of that tight lie is just, it's so tough. I mean, you hit it a tenth of an inch heavy and you're going to look like Jordan Spieth. I mean, it doesn't take much at all. And, you know, any wet, you know, just those simple wedge shots the shot that looks simple, like the shot on 15, you got a downhill lie if you lay it up too much down the right side of the fairway. So that's why you see a lot of guys lay up left. It's a little bit of flatter lie into the green. And, you know, you just have to position the ball properly and give yourself the flattest lies possible. And
if you could have one, like, world-class skill and you're going to the Masters and you're the best in the world at one aspect of golf, which one would you want it to be to have success at Augusta?
You've got to be a precision iron player. You have to. You have to be able to dial in your distance so well there, because every, you know, the difference between, you know, 1 or 2 yards off is dramatic. You know, like I mentioned about the 12th hole being, you know, less than 10 yards deep of the green on the green, in some parts of that green. And, you know, to get it on the little tiers, like on the 13th hole, the pin is all the way in the back. And, you know, you've got an area the size of a dining room table, it seems like, to really place your golf ball, or else, you know, it's going to go off in the low areas and the low parts of the green. And, the precision iron game, and getting, in dialing in your distance, I think is crucial.
Yeah. Also, with all the uneven lies, it makes hitting it the right distance even tougher.
Yeah, you get the uneven lies, and like back in I can't remember, late '80s, early '90s, Nick Faldo beat Ray Floyd in a playoff, and Floyd tugged it in the water on the 11th hole to lose to Faldo. Hit the ball was above his feet and he didn't quite calculate that into his shot as much as he needed to. And that's why he tugged the ball a little bit left. And you don't get a lot of even lies. Like the 13th hole is a short par 5, but I remember, you know, you have like a, I mean, for me, I, you know, I'm not Bubba Watson. I don't have wedge to the green, but you know, I had like a 4-iron, let's say, and you're hitting it off a downhill, with the ball above your feet, but you're trying to hit a high cut, with a ball, with a lie that's telling you you're going to hit a low hook. And like, I think that's something that you don't quite see on TV. I mean, the lies just don't always fit the type of shot that you need to play. Same thing on 10, the 10th hole, the ball kind of sits a little above your feet and you really need to hit a high cut into that green to hold it better. If you hit a draw, it'll kind of fall off the left. And, you know, those sorts of little nuances, they totally affect the shot and can really make the pros look dumb if they don't quite, you know, calculate all those little nuances into their equation.
Yeah, I think that's one of those subtle design tricks everybody always talks about. How do you make a course extremely playable for a 15 handicap? A 15 handicap's never going to recognize, like, oh, I have a hook lie and I need to hit a fade into the screen. But for the elite world-class players, it drives them crazy.
Absolutely.
Who do you have for going into this week? Who's your pick?
I don't know. I think it's very open. I think for a golf fan out there, I think this has got to be one of the most exciting Masters. You know, you got Phil playing great. You got Tiger coming back up and knowing the golf course so well. You got McIlroy winning recently at Bay Hill. You know, you have Bubba Watson winning at the Dell Technologies Match Play a week ago. You just have a lot of great players that are really playing well right now. Justin Thomas is playing really well. I don't know. I think it's wide open. I think for the, you know, if I'm a betting man out there, it's hard to pick somebody. If I had to pick somebody, I don't know. Left-handers are seeming to do very well at Augusta. Bubba Watson, even though he might not be a player favorite, inside the ropes, I think Bubba is playing extremely well, and I would put him pretty high on my list for sure. And Mickelson's playing great too. So I don't know. Left-handers kind of, I don't know. I think they have a little bit of an advantage there.
Yeah. I think Bubba, one of the things he can do is he can almost like manufacture angles because of the way he can shape the ball. So, you know, he might not be in the ideal angle, you know, ideal spot to attack a flag, but he can move it so much, he can make the angle.
Yeah, he's as creative of a player as there's been in the last, you know, 20 or 30 years out there and moving the ball around like he does. And yeah, look, I wouldn't put it past him to be in the hunt come back ninth Sunday.
All right, we've got a tradition of overrated, underrated. It's not a tradition unlike any other, but it's our tradition. So I'm going to just throw out a couple Masters things here, and you say, you know, if it's overrated or underrated, you can add explanation, but it's got to be one of the two.
Okay. All right.
Pimento cheese sandwiches.
Never had one. I don't know. Can I balk on that one? Can we come back to that one?
how have you never had one? You didn't try one? Didn't have curiosity?
No, I don't think I did.
Hey,
no, I don't know. I think I don't know if I don't know if I had one at all. But you know what? I would say I don't know. I'd say overrated.
Hey, there's a reason you haven't had one.
If I've got to pick one, I would say overrated.
All right. Driving down Magnolia Lane.
Underrated. It's you just got to do it. It's amazing.
All right. The 14th hole.
That green is difficult. I don't know. I don't think it's, I don't know where it's rated, but I would say it's really tough. So let's go underrated there.
All right. And then the crow's nest.
The crow's nest, not overrated. And I don't know if it's underrated. It's just amazing. It's like a religious experience to stay on the grounds of Augusta National. So I don't know. It's certainly not overrated. So if I have to pick one, it'll be underrated.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for your time, and we're looking forward to a great Masters week, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Andy, for having me on. I really appreciate this.